Welcome, Hog fans, into the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. I'm Blake Sutton from Whole Hog Sports. I'm here with Scotty Bordelon from Whole Hog Sports. We're inside Bud Walton Arena, where Mike Anderson just finished his press conference. We're going to talk a little bit about the Florida loss and also a little bit about Arkansas's upcoming game against LSU on Saturday. But first, let's talk a little bit about the Florida loss. I was trying to come up with different words, different superlatives, you know, worst ever offensive performance, worst game I've ever seen in Bud Walton Arena.
Really bad, didn't quite do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Terrible, horrible, no good, very bad game against Florida. And obviously Arkansas lost the game, but Florida didn't shoot well either. That was one of the worst games I've ever seen in Bud Walton Arena.
Yeah.
And I've seen quite a few.
I was, my story on Wednesday was that speaking offensively specifically, that was Arkansas's worst home performance under Mike Anderson, like as far as like offensive efficiency rating goes. They scored at a 74.2% rate over 100 possessions, and that was worst at home under Mike, and that was second worst in his tenure, like regardless of where the game's played.
Wow.
And it was the – so I've got this spreadsheet, and I've got it broken down into highest offensive efficiency ratings and lowest – on offense, and then I've got best and worst defensive ratings. So Arkansas held Florida to 83 points per over 100 possessions, average out to that.
Right.
And that's top 35 in Mike's – that's top 35 in Mike's tenure. It's the first time they've lost when they've held the team to an offensive efficiency rating under 85 over 100 possessions. Is the first time they were previously 34-0.
Wow. Gives you an idea of how bad offense
that tells you.
Was.
And that's spanning, you know, seven-plus seasons. We're in season eight now, so seven-plus seasons.
Wow.
That's the first time. And it's pretty solid that Arkansas's held that many teams to an offensive efficiency rating of 85 or lower. But, I mean, Arkansas's defense was still pretty good the other night. Like, Florida played pretty bad too. Like, it was just a crap fest. Like, they were just like, it was awful,
which is a shame because it was one of the biggest crowds all year.
And then they rewarded the fans showing up by missing their first 22 threes combined, which is atrocious.
It was bad.
That kind of gives you a snapshot of how bad it was Wednesday. Like, you get one of your best, I guess, 30 defensive performances under Mike, and you score 51 points to counter it. So it wasn't pretty.
And to add insult to injury, Kayvon Allen led all scorers for Florida. He's 8 points above his average. He was only averaging 10 points a game coming in. He got 18.
He was at his season average by halftime.
Yeah.
Which was, I think we I think we can agree
spot.
That was kind of predictable.
Yeah.
I think.
He always seems to have a good game against Arkansas.
Yeah, he's averaging, I think, something like 16 a game in like, I think, six regular season games against Arkansas. Like, he's 6-1 against Arkansas in his career. The only loss was in the SEC tournament last year. But other than that, he's kind of been a thorn in Arkansas's side.
Yeah. So many terrible things to talk about from the Florida game. So let's get started. I'm just going over the bench here. Bench scoring. Let's see what we have. Desi Sills, 0 points. Keyshawn Ember-Simpson, look at that, 0. Gabo Saboyan. Funny, 0 points. Reggie Chaney bringing up the rear with 0.
He traveled 8 seconds after he checked into the game.
So,
eight seconds.
Arkansas's bench combined.
I saw that stat in the stat broadcast the other night, and I had to tell everybody in the room.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost – that's really hard to do.
Yeah.
To turn the ball over. I mean, the ball's not in your hands a lot.
Yeah.
And you travel 8 seconds after you get into the ball game. Like, that. And he only played 5 minutes in the game. So, like, he got – and Mike said it was a little bit of the frustration. So I asked him, I was like, you got Dan in foul trouble. And the first pick off your bench is Gabe.
Yeah.
Where's Reggie? Why is Reggie not out there? I asked him if he was physically okay. He said, yeah, he was frustrated. And Mike said that Reggie was sorely missed. I'm like, well.
Yeah. Why didn't he go back in the game?
Yeah, exactly.
So Arkansas's bench combines for 0 points against Florida. I guess, well, let's go over the bad a little bit more, shall we? Daniel Gafford, 9 points. Only got four shots.
Four shots.
Where he wasn't fouled, like where yes. he didn't call a foul.
Yeah, and I think Mike did a decent job like pointing that out. Like the shots that he's fouled on, that he misses, he doesn't like those don't count in the box score.
Right. So. I will say, and I told you this when we were watching it from press row the other night. I remember two separate occasions where Gafford had the ball around the rim, near the rim, and tried to dunk it and didn't even really leave his feet. It was like he was trying to dunk it without jumping, and he just ran the ball into the rim and missed it.
Strange.
Or he would get fouled, and it's like, man, you're 6'11". Like, you could just jump a little bit and get a dunk. I think he's too focused on trying to get highlight dunks instead of just using the backboard and scoring when he could have both times, but instead he tries to dunk and just almost blocks himself with the rim.
I think he's a little bit tired, too. I really do. I think that's kind of part of it. And one of the times when he was shooting free throws, I know you were sitting right beside me, and like his whole free throw motion was just all arms.
Yeah.
And it was a really bad miss. And then he comes back, he kind of like deep breath, kind of settles in, uses legs and makes the free throw, I think. And I just think he's being asked to do, like he's being asked to do something that maybe isn't in his best interest or like what best utilizes his talent, which is posting up. And I mean, it takes quite a bit of effort to go down, and like people want him to post really aggressively and every possession. That can get tiring. Plus you're defending the rim on the other end against a guy who's probably weighs more than you or is of comparable size, I guess. Maybe Kavarius Hayes was pretty much Gafford's identical build, maybe a couple inches shorter. But I mean, that's tough. And I think part of it is just he gets worn out quite a bit because he goes pretty hard for majority of the game. So I think that's got a little bit to do with it.
Yeah, and just I think he's also expending a lot of energy on defense. A lot of times when they switch, you see Gafford, he's having to scamper out to the perimeter and guard a guy out there, which that shouldn't be his role.
Yeah,
either.
Mike brought that up today. That I think Bob asked why, or what can Dan do to like stay out of foul trouble? And I think Mike mentioned that he's been putting a lot of ball screens, and he's got to check a guard on the perimeter now, and those quicker guys are going to get around him, and he's going to have to use his hands to try to make up some ground and get back in front or get in position to make a block a shot, or rotate back onto his guy. After the initial defender catches up with the ball handler, and that can put him in some tough spots, and that can definitely wear him out.
Yeah, and he got in foul trouble the other night too. He had two
in
the first
half. Straight SEC games he's been in foul trouble.
Yeah.
He was averaging like I think two fouls a game in December, which is pretty good. You were starting to really trust him a lot, and I mean we would look up sometimes during non-conference, and he would pick up a foul late in the game, and be like, and John George would say, "That's Daniel Gafford's second foul," and we're like, wow, that's kind of impressive. He's playing so many minutes and not fouling. But SEC teams know him a little bit better than some of those teams in the non-con. So I think that's playing a role.
Yeah, and you didn't really get a good game out of Gafford. Only had 9 points. I feel like they tried to get the ball into him, but Mike White, Florida's coach, said after the game they were doubling, sometimes triple teaming Daniel Gafford. He was neutralized, effectively.
And yeah, he scored what, 9 points, and he scored I think five in the first. I think he scored five like in the
first couple
10 or 15. I think he scored two buckets really early, and then he hit a free throw to like break that long scoring drought.
Yeah.
But his next bucket didn't come till late in the second half, and that just can't happen, dude. He's arguably your only pro. We don't know how the future is going to turn out for some of those guys, like maybe Isaiah Joe or Jalen Harris or whatever. But he's your only pro. He can't only have like four shots recorded in the box score. He's got to have much more than that. And they've got to do a better job finding him. And I think some of that falls on the staff too. You got to find better ways to utilize him.
Yeah.
Instead of just sending him down to the block and be like, hey, get post position.
And just stick your hand up.
Yeah, exactly.
And wait for somebody to pass.
He can do that. That doesn't mean the guards are going to feed him the ball. You know what I mean? Right. So he's kind of expending a lot of energy, sometimes with no payoff.
Right.
So That's tough.
It's disappointing. Isaiah Joe didn't have a good game. He only had 6 points. I think you said it's the first time all year where he hasn't gotten double digits scoring.
Yeah, first time he hadn't scored at least 10 points.
It was 2 of 10. Jalen Harris, for all the talk, I mean, after that A&M game, there was so much talk about all these games where he had, seven assists with zero turnovers.
Yeah,
and then he, uncharacteristically, he had 3 turnovers in the game.
Had 3 of them in the first half.
Yeah.
Which is not like him.
No.
Like, Arkansas. He likes to go fast, but I think Florida had them just so out of whack, so out of sync, that he was, like, playing faster than what's normal for him.
Yeah.
Led to some sloppy turnovers. I think he traveled one time. And he pump faked on the perimeter and started, I think, a dribble drive, and he forgot to put the ball on the floor, which can't do.
It's one of the rules in basketball,
right? Yeah, exactly.
16 turnovers, 11 missed free throws. Just a horrible game all around, but it's not all gloom and doom, right? There was one bright spot, Mason Jones. He scored 30 points. The rest of his team scored 21. If Mason Jones hadn't gone off, you wonder how bad it could have been.
How many points did you say Arkansas got from its bench?
Let me put on my readers here. Zero.
Zero.
0 points from the bench combined.
So where would they be without Mason Jones?
Oh, man. I mean, you would have had a 25-point loss to Florida at home in your conference home.
Gross. Over
there. In front of a big crowd. Yeah.
I mean, we've said that before. Like, where would Arkansas be without Mason? In several instances this year, like, he had 7 assists and without a turnover in like 35 plus minutes against Indiana. I remember writing that story, and there's been a couple of other instances where he's like, feels like he's been the only guy that can get going sometimes that's like consistently aggressive. He did settle for some threes. Like, I did everybody's shot chart.
Yeah.
Like I normally do. I did that yesterday, and he settled for some really long, bad threes, but he was also the only guy that would, I feel like, that would penetrate and initiate contact,
yeah,
and consistently drive and find any kind of productive at all. Like, he was probably the only guy that did that. And man, he had a really good game the other night. And I remember Arkansas. I think he scored 11 points in Arkansas's 19-5 run to cut it to 2. Late, and 30 seconds left, Jalen passes to Mason. Mike calls for time, and then before they go to the huddle, Mike is looking at Mason, and Mason, they make eye contact, and Mason like points to his chest and is like, "I want the ball."
Yeah.
And then Mike drew up a play for him, and that sequence after the timeout is something that I kind of like to talk about too, because we asked Mike and Mason what the plan was coming out of the timeout. Mike said that they obviously wanted to get the ball to Dan. Hmm. Mason came in here and said that Mike drew up a play for Mason to come off a pick from Adrio.
Hmm. Conflicting stories there.
Yes.
You wonder if
we did see. I watched the replay the other night. Dan did have his guy, like, he was standing under the rim, like, for a potential dump down, but Mason wasn't going to pass that ball up. He's the one with 30 points.
Right.
So he's not going to pass that up.
Well, I wonder if, with all the talk about, you know, why aren't they getting the ball to Gafford? Why aren't they getting Gafford more involved? Maybe Mike went with the safe answer.
Yeah, like, with the hot hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We tried to get the ball to Gafford, but, you know, it just didn't happen.
I think that was probably your second option if Mason couldn't get the shot he wanted. And then let's talk about that putback attempt that Adrio had.
Oh, boy.
You watch the replay. When he leaves his feet, his heels are over the inline. Like, he's almost like he's on his tiptoes, and his heels are over the inline, over the baseline.
Yeah. I don't know why you don't just reset right there.
Yeah, just think about that. Or if you can, if you have a basketball and a full court basketball court behind your house, like, try that. It's hard. It's almost impossible. And it was the most awkward shot I've probably ever seen.
I don't know what it is. It's like Adrio's afraid the basket's going to bite him or something if he makes one.
I don't know. He's got the yips around the rim.
Big time. It's something to behold. I mean, a guy like that that's, you know, can usually count on a guy like that to make a layup. But, yeah, maybe it was the heat of the moment. Maybe he panicked. But I don't know why you had enough time to reset right there and get a better shot than to try to lay it in when you're like behind the backboard.
Mm-hmm.
That was just really awkward.
I think he was trying to get out of his hand as quickly as he could, because he knew if he like took a dribble, defense was going to come to him.
Yeah.
And he was going to have his shot swatted. Like, I've got his KenPom page pulled up right here. These are just 2-point attempts from Adro over the last month or so. He's 2 for 8, 2 for 7, 2 for 3 against Texas State, or against Austin Peay. He had 2 dunks. Hmm. 0 for 2 against Texas State. 0 for 4 against Georgia Tech. 1 for 5. 0 for 4.
Wow.
That's not good at all, dude. Like, and
no.
I don't think it's a stretch to say he's got the yips around the rim, but I don't get it. I don't get it.
I know, and with such a young team, you hoped that, well, you know, we have this junior, this veteran player, but he's just not performing at the level.
Like, what has happened since the Colorado State game? Like, before, like, to start the season, he was on 2-point shots, 4 for 4, 4 for 6, 2 for 6 against Indiana. Indiana bothered him a little bit. He was 5 for 5 against Montana State, 4 for 6, 4 for 6, 5 for 7.
Wow. Yeah, just a marked drop-off.
Yeah, since the Colorado State game. I don't.
And most of them are point-blank shots. They're layups and dunks.
Yeah, like, they're point-blank. I could show you how point-blank they are. Like, yeah. I'm doing a shot yard. Like, it's looking pretty rough now, especially after 4 for 15. You're 6 for 8. 33% on 2-point looks the last 3 games.
Mm. Yikes. And, you know, I will – you got to give credit where it's due, even though Arkansas lost the game. For them to come back down 16 with a chance to win the game at the end, it was impressive. But, I mean, even when they started that run, I think we were talking about it in press row, it's like I was saying, I really hope they don't come all the way back and still lose. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. And segue into this LSU game, you wonder – with all the energy they put and all the emotion they put just to get back in the game with Florida, they still lost. What are they going to have in the tank for LSU? This is a good LSU team coming to Fayetteville.
I've heard a lot of people say, too, that LSU is better than Florida was, or Florida is.
Oh, I think so. Definitely.
So that's another problem.
LSU's won 4 in a row. They just beat Alabama by 9 at LSU. Tremont Waters led all scorers with 19. He gave Arkansas fits last year.
He dropped 27 and 11 on Arkansas when they played at Baton Rouge last year. Unbelievable.
And even when LSU played in Fayetteville, they beat Arkansas and they just had no answer for him.
Yeah, he had 8 assists in that game. He didn't score, I think, probably like we expected, but you come, an opposing player comes in and drops 8 assists and only turns the ball over twice, playing as much as he does.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how many minutes he played in that game. I'll go back and look real quick, but like, that is really, really, really hard. He played 36 minutes, had 8 points, eight assists, 5 rebounds, and 2 turnovers.
It's going to be tough for Arkansas, and the danger here now, you picked one up against A&M that Arkansas was predicted to lose. You thought maybe they could pick one up against Florida.
We talked about it last week. We thought that was one of the games that they could win and probably had to.
Yeah.
You got to steal one away from home.
And you thought maybe they could beat Florida the way Florida lost to South Carolina. And, you know, Arkansas had a chance to beat Florida on Saturday on Wednesday. Florida shot really poorly, had a chance to win that game. The danger now is that if they lose to LSU next week, they have games at Tennessee and at Ole Miss. If they lose on Saturday to LSU, you're potentially starting 1-4 in conference. And that's going to be a really tough hole to dig out of, losing four straight conference games. You just don't see this team making the NCAA tournament. It's just I think at this point, it's going to take a miracle. They're going to need to win like 12 games in conference just to be, you know, on the bubble.
Right. KenPom's got Arkansas projected to go 9-9 in the league now. But yeah,
that's not going to cut it.
Mm-mm, not at all. Wins. No, not at all. And I think we expect Arkansas to lose at Tennessee. Like, yeah. Georgia went there and almost lost by 50.
Yikes.
They almost lost by 50 last week. And Tennessee beat the crap out of somebody else. last week. Who was it? Yeah, they beat Missouri. They beat Missouri by 24 on the road.
Wow.
So Arkansas's got Tennessee next Tuesday and then at Ole Miss next Saturday.
Who just beat Auburn?
Mississippi. Ole Miss is one of the – I think Pat Jenkins – I was on Pat Jenkins' show the other day. He was asking me about the surprises in the league, and I said probably South Carolina because they beat Florida on the road and then came back home and beat Mississippi State at home.
Right.
And Mississippi was probably my second choice. Let's look at they are 12-2. They've beaten Vanderbilt on the road. They got Ole Miss got 30 points out of one of its guys at Vanderbilt, and then they beat Auburn, who's top 15 on KenPom. They beat them by 15.
Yeah.
Wasn't even close. 15, and then Arkansas plays Missouri after that. Then they get to go to Texas Tech.
Mm.
Top 10 team.
What a fun
Ken
month.
Palm. How about that?
January is not looking good.
No.
For the Razorbacks.
I mean, it could start sliding pretty fast if they don't figure something out.
You're going to need production from your bench, and you're going to need production from your, NBA center.
I was talking to my father-in-law yesterday, and he said, I asked him if he watched any of the Florida game. And he said, I watched about the first half, and then I watched about the last minute. And I was like, yeah, I understand why you turned it off after the first half. Like, there's nothing to watch.
Yeah.
And he said something that I thought was pretty spot on. He said they've got a bunch of freshmen that are playing like freshmen. And when you've got a young team, you need some guys that play like they're older.
Yeah.
And they're not getting it. They're not getting it. Like, Isaiah Joe... 2-for-10.
Yeah.
That's just probably as bad as he shot all year. Then your bench gives you nothing. They're largely inexperienced. Like, Gabe is, like, the most experienced guy coming off the bench. Think about that.
Yeah.
Think about that.
It's not encouraging.
It's not good.
No.
It's not good at all. But they've got to have guys make shots. Like, it just comes down to making shots because you're playing – defensively, you're playing well enough. Like, they held them to – 85 points per over 100 possessions, on average, I guess, and you lose the game. It just comes down to making shots.
Yeah. They didn't make enough of them.
Mm-mm.
But, well, what a really depressing podcast for this rainy, cold Friday. Hey, at least it's Friday, right?
Right. I guess so.
But it's kind of gloom and doom for the Razorback basketball team right now. They are young, but – is it already time to start talking about next year? You're going to most likely lose Daniel Gafford, mm-hmm. and don't really know who's going to replace him yet. We might be getting a little too far ahead of ourselves, but I was saying before Mike's press conference today, if this team can host the NIT, I think you consider that with as much youth as on the team, I think you consider that, I don't want to say a successful season, because obviously you want to make the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. But all things considered, I mean, probably about what you could expect from a team so young.
That was my expectations.
Yeah.
I think now we're back to maybe those preseason expectations where you're wondering about the score, where's the scoring coming from? Like,
yeah,
they might be good defensively, but who's going to make shots? Because they've had so many unproven college scorers, and that's why, like, in the preseason, I was like, they're going to have to defend well because we don't know where the scoring is coming from, like, outside of Dan. And his game-by-game numbers can fluctuate just given what other teams do. Or, if those young guards just – I don't want to say they forget about him, but just don't feed him. So,
yeah,
I think we're almost back to where we were a couple months ago, which is not good when you're diving headfirst in the league play.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. And who knows? I'm being kind of gloom and doom talking about losing four games in a row, but I can't see the future. Maybe they beat LSU on Saturday. I mean,
yeah.
It's not, crazier things have happened.
But then it's going to be like, well, you should protect the home floor.
Right.
Oh, great. Now Arkansas has to go to Tennessee. And then you're right back.
Yeah.
Almost like right back where you were.
Yeah. It's a bummer to pick up a road conference win and then turn right around and
just completely negate it.
Yeah.
Just days later.
Yeah. With one of the worst offensive performances in Mike's tenure.
Mm-hmm.
But Arkansas is back in Bud Walton Arena, 5 o'clock, to play LSU on Saturday. Should be a decent crowd. They're going to honor Sidney Moncrief before the game and then during the first half. So
yeah, might have some folks come also, out for that. I walked into Bud. I got here about – see, Mike's press conference was at 1:30 today, and I got here a little bit early. I brought some food in and ate Arby's in the media room by myself.
Yum.
And I walked in and I saw just kind of right in front of the little Hall of Fame museum or the whatever you want to call it, like the Tommy Boyer Hall of Fame or whatever. Yeah, yeah. And they had a bunch of posters. They had a bunch of posters laid out. This guy, Nolan Richardson, Scotty Thurman, Mike back when he was an assistant, Corey Beck, Dwight Stewart, and I think it's Clint McDaniel on those posters. It looks like a pretty sick poster, so they may be handing those out on Saturday too, which is, I mean, you might be tired of Arkansas like clinging to the glory days, but I mean, it's a pretty sick poster.
Yeah, and it's another one of those kind of benchmark years. It's 25th anniversary.
Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah.
It is a pretty sweet poster.
Were,
right?
If they were like, oh, this is 27th anniversary, like it's different, yeah. But you right. know, it's 25th. Those posters are pretty sick. Like whether, like regardless, I think if you're kind of sick of things right now, like that's a pretty tight poster.
Yeah, and it can just remind you of the glory days, you know. Simpler times, mid-90s.
Even though you may be wanting to make some glory days of, like, glory days presently, you right. know what I mean? But
that's the next best thing. You could take that to Hobby Lobby and have them put it in a frame. It's a nice poster.
It's a nice collectible.
Like, yeah.
It's a nice collectible. Like, it's nice. Like, if you got the ADG framed like my dog or my dad does. I almost said my dog. My dad does. like in your man cave or whatever. Like, yeah. It'd be pretty sweet to sit next to it. So.
Yeah.
It's a cool collectible, whether you're kind of happy with how things are going right now or not.
Well, I think it'll be a pretty good crowd with I wish our listeners could see this post right now. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's pretty tight. I tweeted it out. I'm at NWA okay. Scotty if you haven't seen it.
And with honoring Sidney Moncrief, I think they'll get a pretty decent crowd. And maybe, who knows, maybe the young players, the bench will come out and want to get that Florida loss out of their mouth and they'll play a lot better, but we shall see. That's 5 o'clock Saturday.
Yep.
We'll be back next week with the basketball podcast of Mid-America. We are inside Bud Walton Arena. For Scotty Bordelon, this is Blake Sutton from Whole Hog Sports. Thanks for listening.